In his concluding discussion of the conference, Lessons from Vicos, Professor Norman Aboff, director of the Sustainable Rice Systems Program of CFAD, who has 30 years' experience in international development, made the following remarks.
The only thing we learn from the past is that we don't learn from the past. Mm-hmm. Very cynical. And I think the Vicos experience actually suggests that's not necessarily true. I was really appalled. I was pleased by Enrique's talk yesterday, but it's appalled to hear what he said about the approach of going into Vicos so heroically, so long ago, you know, to bring about cultural change, to work in such a top-down manner. Now, the fact was, in those days, that was state of the art. So the first saying I said is irrelevant. Why do we get so, you know, if that's what we knew then, I think that the person did it. We're doing the best they knew how, the best others knew how. In many ways, this was ahead of the curve. But now we look back at it in retrospect and say, gee, I'm so glad to hear what Jorge was recounting and Beatrice, the way we're now approaching those questions 10 and 20 and 30 years later, working 50 in total. Now, they started earlier than just today, though. But to work in a more collaborative mode, respecting the knowledge and experience that's already there, and trying to work out some kind of partnership. In fact, Jorge used the word friendship, one of my favorite words in development work, to work on a basis as friends, as partners, and collaborators. And I think one of the ways of summarizing this is that I contrast my approach to development with one of my colleagues who will remain nameless here in my own department. When I sort of thought, well, why do he and I work differently? So he starts with the literature and goes to the real world and studies it very carefully and then comes back to the literature. Whereas my preference starts with the real world and go to literature and back to the real world. Now, the cycle is the same. But where do you start? What is your starting point? What's your alpha? What's your omega, to use the religious metaphor? And to me, the real world is and should be the alpha and the omega. Doesn't mean the literature is not important. Doesn't mean literature can't be very helpful. That it shouldn't be, but it's in that kind of a cycle rather than being the alpha and omega itself. And it seems to me one of the great contributions of the Vicos project was, here's a case where the real world started as an alpha. And happily, it's also made as the omega. We come back to it and continue learning with it.
What should Cornell University do today? The university was founded with a land-grant mission to reach out into the world to solve vexing problems. We certainly have a wealth of expertise to offer. What are our best strategies? Can the Cornell Peru Project teach us anything? An academic institution like Cornell is not an NGO, a state or international agency that has the experience and skills to work with local populations for long-term results. Nor can we maintain the presence in the field for continuity and sustainability. However, we have the capacities to act as mediators between these institutions, local populations, and the university. We can also provide basic research, historical and comparative perspectives that local institutions and populations may not have access to. The Cornell Peru Project teaches us that what may look like success in the short term, say 10 years, may not be sustainable in the long run. Sound record keeping is essential to establish an historical basis for continual evaluation. Universities should share their records with local populations. The Cornell Peru Project did not adequately return the vast knowledge or the essential records generated by the project. We are attempting to share those records and findings now. University faculty and graduate students often have difficulty working within an open learning paradigm. Within the academic environment, it is a question of ownership of research, theses, and innovations. In Vicos and many other parts of the world, that kind of individual ownership is not recognized. Knowledge is collectively owned and shared. This, perhaps, is one of the largest obstacles to collaborative research and application. Moreover, academics may find it hard to step outside of their disciplinary training and learn, quote, from the natives. Time and again, we have learned that the natives have a lot to teach us. The best innovations come from collaboration between users and sources of research. Through the use of free email, approximately 300,000 of the world's poorest farmers in 35 countries in Asia, Africa, and Latin America are often doubling their incomes and productivity. This low-tech system is heralded as a means to reduce world hunger and poverty. Working with collaborators in Madagascar, CFAD recognized the valuable contribution of local knowledge and experimentation. This new paradigm calls for endogenous development and university collaboration. Universities are partners with local communities, but knowledge and technology no longer flows from the top down as it did in the Cornell Peru project. The cultural belief at the time, which continues in some corners of academia today, was that knowledge generated in great centers of learning was superior to local knowledge. Modern agriculture provided technologies such as genetic manipulation of plants, chemical fertilizers, and insecticides that were believed to be the answer to world hunger and assure progress. Today, modern agriculture is in crisis, and perhaps the natives have solutions to offer. Norman Upoff declared the following as one of his principles of development during the VICOS conference, and I quote him, "Start in the real world, move to the literature, and then go back to the real world," unquote. I would like to add that we should further develop our powerful tools of electronic technology to connect the real world with academia. I propose the development of a digital electronic portal at Cornell to connect diverse learning communities. I'm going to close with one anecdotal story from the VICOS conference to illustrate a couple of points. We took our visitors from VICOS on a tour of our beautiful surroundings, which included an invitation for a private visit to Lamoureux Winery. During the visit, Manuel Mesa walked out into the unplowed field and picked a plant that he showed his colleagues, identifying it as a medicinal plant used in VICOS. For the rest of us, it was just a weed. My point is that, for too long, we in academia have denigrated the natives' powers of observation and experimentation. While Manuel was at Cornell, his wife Antolina was preparing to accompany URPCHI director Beatriz Rojas to Turin, Italy, to participate in the Slow Food Movement Conference in 2006. This event brought together 1,000 chefs and 5,000 small farmers and food producers from 150 countries to mobilize the deindustrialization of agriculture. The Slow Food Movement is an international movement with 80,000 members in 50 countries. The San Francisco Chronicle reported that the founder of Chez Panisse, Alice Waters, mingled with farmers from around the world. One of those farmers was Vicosina Antolina Sanchez. Though from a tiny village high in the Andes, Antolina is now an international actor in a powerful global countercultural movement. I hope to see her and Alice Waters at the next Slow Food Conference in San Francisco in September of 2008. Thank you for joining me on Cyber Tower, and I invite you to submit your comments to the discussion board.